You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Times Higher Education podcast. I'm Sarah Custer. Historically, universities have been rooted in their local community, but this has come under greater scrutiny in the last few years as the town and gown gap has been thrown into greater relief. Joining me today is our deputy news editor, John Morgan. Hi, John.
Hello.
He's recently reported on the civic activity of some English universities. And I also spoke with John Goddard, who's emeritus professor at the University of Newcastle and an expert in regional engagement by universities around the world. But first, let's start with you, John. You've written some news features recently looking at two specific models of civic universities in the UK, Warwick University in Coventry and UCLan in Preston. Do you want to start off by talking about what you found in Warwick?
Sure. Well, this probably comes in the wider context of an increasing awareness in Britain that regional inequalities are maybe the biggest factor in why our economy is not as big as it could be. And if we're going to address that fact and increase productivity, then we're really going to have to increase the economic performance levels of our regional towns and cities. Mm-hmm. So within that context, universities are hugely important as, you know, potentially the most important institutions in their towns and cities, alongside things like councils, and they've got enormous economic clout, prestige, mm-hmm. In a way that many institutions in regional towns and cities don't. So, as you mentioned, I've recently visited Warwick University, which is actually in Coventry. A lot of people don't realise that. It's got a slightly problematic name in that people think that it's located in Warwick, and it's located right on the fringe of the city. Mm. So those two factors have contributed to Warwick perhaps being seen as standing as rather aloof from the city of Coventry in the past. And Coventry is a city that has had a lot of problems related to the decline of the car industry and has really struggled with deindustrialisation. But Coventry, I was hearing, is now a vibrant city, and Warwick has really taken a turn towards the city, particularly since had a new vice-chancellor in 2016, mm-hmm. Stuart Croft, and we talked about some of the reasons why Warwick might be turning towards the city of Coventry, and I talked with Coventry City Council's chief executive about some of the benefits that it gets from the two universities, because obviously it's got Coventry University as well as Warwick University. Mm-hmm. So broadly speaking, what Martin Reeves, the Coventry City Council chief executive, told me was that it's massively significant for Coventry to have two universities that complement each other. They're different types of university, mm-hmm. and they're not necessarily competing.
Warwick being more the Russell Group.
So Warwick is the research intensive Russell Group member, mm-hmm. and Coventry University is a former polytechnic, mm-hmm. which is located right in the heart of the city centre. Mm-hmm. So these things would apply to a lot of university cities. Martin, the Coventry City Council chief exec, was saying that, you know, the two universities really help improve the skill levels in Coventry. They help Coventry companies by servicing their R&D research and development needs. Mm-hmm. You've got 60,000 students in the city spending huge amounts of money on housing, leisure, retail. Mm-hmm. That all helps attract inward investment and bring new businesses to the city. And he also argued that this is very much in universities' interests to be linking with their cities, because the impact of gender and research funding, you need to be able to show that you're translating research into industry, and to do that you need to be connected to a vibrant city and have really strong links there. And if any kind of social policy that's going on in universities, they need sort of a testing ground to put ideas into practice. You get that in cities. So mm-hmm. he's arguing that this is all really in universities' academic and business interests.
Sure.
So I think broadly in British politics, Brexit has focused minds on regional inequalities in this country.
Yeah.
As the vote, you know, exposed a huge gulf in in attitudes and in and thus in economic strength between the regions and London and the area around it. When I asked Stuart Croft if the Brexit vote had focused Coventry's minds
right.
on its city even more,
yeah.
he seemed to very much sort of agree with that idea and pointed out that Warwick was the area around the university was very much sort of isolated in being a Remain voting area in a broader Coventry area that backed Leave.
Politics also has a lot to play in whenever you went up to Preston as well to talk to UCLan and learn about the Preston model. How does that work?
So the Preston model, which is being seen as a potential model for how a Labour government might try and transform city and town economies more broadly, it breaks down into two aspects. So it's been led by Preston Council, and the first element is getting the local anchor institutions like the council, like the university, to spend more of their procurement investment in local firms rather than spending with national or multinational firms. And secondly, where there are gaps in the local supply chain and those institutions can't spend with local firms, encouraging the growth of worker-owned co-ops in Preston to fill those gaps and provide the services locally. And there's a university lecturer, Julian Manley at UCLan, who was very integral to getting the whole Preston model underway. He's sort of formed a quite close relationship with Matthew Brown, who's now the leader of the council and has driven the agenda on the Preston model. And Julian Manley now has a full-time role at the university, leading the university's engagement with the Preston model. So UCLan has very much increased its procurement spend with local firms. And I think the most recent figure was £63 million for its spending with firms in Preston. And the university is supporting the growth of worker-owned cooperatives by getting students to set those up and providing incubation space, and that's also a way for the university to retain graduates in Preston rather than moving to Liverpool, Manchester and London. So that's kind of a different model of civic impact. But there's a lot of interesting new ways of thinking in these areas that are developing.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it probably, and unsurprisingly, would reflect the type of community that universities are based in. So Preston is an arguably smaller town than Coventry, and UCLan can be an anchor institution, really, not just for Preston, but for the surrounding area. So whenever you're speaking to them, do you think the Preston model is something that could be applied to other situations like that, where you've got one main university that's kind of serving towns, really, more than cities like Coventry?
As you say, it's a different kind of model to what Warwick's doing. Warwick's a very different kind of institution with more of a global profile. Probably depends on if we see a Labour government and if it tries to spread the Preston model more widely, or if the Preston model gets taken up more broadly by other towns and cities. But these ideas about local procurement and universities using their financial clout to drive improvements in their city and town economies, they're also going on in the US. I've looked at Johns Hopkins University and what it's doing in Baltimore in the past, and that's very much at the core of it, that university's work. So there's absolutely nothing to stop universities getting together with other local anchor institutions in their towns and cities and really prioritising the impact that they have for local firms.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
Whenever you were speaking with Warwick specifically, was there any sort of tension between global outreach and establishing international partnerships and the investment that they're making into local activities and civic engagement?
It's probably not just an issue for Warwick. I think there is an extent to which the highest profile research universities in the country have largely in the past seen themselves as you know, playing in a global market, when they're competing for staff, for postdocs, they're competing against, you know, universities all over the world, and in this country, local, even the word feels a bit sort of second rate and grubby.
Provincial.
In many minds. But I think Sheffield in particular is a university that's really prioritised its civic mission in past years. So I don't think there needs to be a tension. There's very clear local benefits from having a university with a high global profile in terms of bringing in international students. Mm-hmm. It's well established.
And Sheffield started the We Are International campaign as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's very well established, the benefits that international students will have for local economies. On most basic level, they're spending on accommodation, in restaurants, on taxis, but also there's a benefit to kind of a city's soft power and international links if it's attracting students from all over the world, and it has a global profile through its university, that's going to have direct sort of high level economic benefits. So I don't think there needs to be necessarily a tension. It's just a way of there's a need for universities to sort of better link the global and the local.
Yeah, they can work together.
And make clear the local benefits that its global profile has. And Martin Reeves, the Coventry City Council Chief Executive, was very much making the point that the two universities are globally connected, but with local impact, and their global profile is part of what is helping make Coventry vibrant, because it gives the city an international profile.
Yeah, and it was just voted to be the City of Culture.
Indeed, Coventry is going to be the UK's City of Culture in 2021. That went through a competitive bidding process, and the two universities in Coventry were early supporters of that bid. And and the City Council was really making clear that university support was vital in winning the bid, because that was a real long shot at the start.
I don't think we can have this conversation without talking about Michael Barber's recent comments, saying Michael Barber, the chair of the Office for Students, which is the university regulator in the UK, saying that it would not bail out failing universities, which is messaging to me that seems to disregard the value that universities bring to their local economy and how they can really supplement the services that the government is taking away. So what are your comments?
Yeah, exactly. Statement? I think one of the most notable things about Michael Barber's article in The Telegraph was that it didn't mention at all the civic importance of universities, or the impact that a university failure or market exit would have on its city, town, region. He made clear that the IFS, Office of Students, would not bail out a university, but if that happened, MPs in the city, town, region where this university is would be absolutely up in arms over the loss of jobs, the impact on students. If those students were lost to the regional economy, all the economic disadvantages that would inflict on local firms who benefit from student spend, potential loss of companies who wouldn't stay in the city or town if its skill levels were going to take a dive because it had no longer had a university. The regional economic impact would be huge. So it's seems somewhat negligent to ignore that and for neither government nor the regulator to be doing some thinking about the civic impact that a university failure would have. And factoring that into their thinking. But that it's probably indicative of a much wider failure in HE policy to take account of that key civic role that universities have, and the fact that that's going to need to be stepped up post-Brexit for our regional economies to thrive and to recover some kind of manufacturing sector. Universities and their civic role are going to be central to that. But it's been pointed out several times that HE policy and the way that's developed in the Department for Education doesn't take any account of university civic roles whatsoever. It might happen in schools policy, but it certainly doesn't happen in HE policy. There's no, whether it's the abolition of student number controls or the TEF, there's been absolutely no mention of sort of regional civic impact in those policies.
That's interesting, because I think in other countries it might be a bit different. And John Goddard, who is the Emeritus Professor at the University of Newcastle, might be someone who could explain a little bit more about how it's done in other countries. He's been involved in a program in the Netherlands that focuses on building partnerships between 27 higher education institutions in 11 major Dutch cities. So I had a chat with him and we started out talking about this deal.
What's been emerging at a European level and equally very strongly at a Dutch government level is a recognition that you cannot separate the educational role of cities, sorry, universities, their role as anchor institutions in cities from their role as actors in research and innovation. So the Dutch government is, I mean, as far as I can understand, just cannot understand what the British government's done of completely getting rid of that separation by splitting up HESCI. They are recognising the need to have a more holistic approach to the role of the universities in their places. So, I mean, that's sort of a sort of storyline that's been going on in the Netherlands, where there's an attempt to sort of make sure that there's a connection between what the Ministry of Education is doing and what the Ministry responsible for the Interior and Territorial Development is doing.
Mm.
They're talking to each other in a very collaborative way.
Mm. I mean, there is a long history of the university being anchored in the civic environment. But I'm wondering if this new phase, or I guess kind of reaffirmation of that mission that's been around for centuries in higher education, do you think it's coincidental that this is coming at a time whenever populism is taking hold in various European countries?
It's difficult to say that. I mean, there is a populism issue in the Netherlands. When I spoke at this event last week in Rotterdam with representatives of all the cities and the universities, it didn't come up as an issue. You know, this was part of a long-term trajectory and development. And certainly in my experience, I've done events around Europe. I did an event with mayors of Italian cities and rectors of Italian universities a couple of years ago. And this was before, I suppose. But no, there was stuff around about populism in Italy then. I've done an event with the opening of the University of Turin every year, does a civic event. So I think this has been going on for some time. Now, I don't pick up any acceleration of that at a European scale, but it may be that I'm just missing that. Certainly is an issue in the UK and the US. Mm. I mean, clearly, no, the verdict from the Brexit vote, you know, indicated that there was a really strong correlation between universities and voting Remain. There is no doubt that in the UK the government was sort of agenda around Mrs. May's agenda when she first became Prime Minister about the challenge of left behind people and left behind places became very much part of the rhetoric. That has to some degree influenced the thinking in BEIS, the business department. I mean, they have a program called the Strength in Places Fund, which is helping universities to engage more with the economic and social development of their places, which is partly a response to sort of Brexit.
Hmm.
The interesting point is, much of that in the UK context, much of that discourse has had absolutely no impact on the higher education sector strictly speaking, I mean, basically, and you've mentioned Mark Obama's OSF position, because what the UK government has done is, as it were, accelerated the marketisation of higher education, which leads to the potential consequences of the failure of universities in key places where they are anchor institutions. So basically, the British government, in terms of its higher education part, has been more or less blind to this agenda.
What is your opinion about Michael Barber's statement that the OFS will not bail out failing universities?
Well, I think they don't have any legal powers to do it. He was being strictly correct insofar as OFS is a competition regulator. It is not responsible for the health and well-being of the sector overall, as was Hefke. So quite legitimate, if they bailed out of university, another university could come and appeal to the competition regulator and say, hang on, this is unfair competition. Your job is not to do this sort of thing. So quite frankly, I think there is a real problem in the DfE, Department of Education, about what to do about this.
Hmm.
I mean, it came up originally with the financial crisis in the Open University.
Hmm.
And as far as I understand it, a number of rather committed conservative marketeers had to bite their lips and say, we've got to bail the Open University out. So technically, Michael Barber is correct in terms of his legal position.
Hmm.
On the other hand, what is quite interesting is the memorandum of understanding that has been drawn up between UKRI and the OFS, which talks about the need for a regional and perspective in the way in which the two organisations operate together. And as you're probably aware, OFS has now been put out a competitive call, for universities, collections of universities, not just single universities, and possibly working with colleges that have higher education programmes, to work on what they call graduate retention in the local labour market. So there is a sense that there's a recognition that there is a problem in terms of the governance of the English higher education system by the abolition of Hefke.
Can we go back to just the role that civic universities can play and the role that civic activities can play in rejuvenating or contributing to the economic prosperity of a region, but also just closing this gap between what's traditionally been called town and gown, but what I really think is becoming the culture wars and kind of this war on the elite class. And do you think that the discussion around the role, the civic role that universities play has shifted in the last few years with Brexit, especially with Trump in the United States? Does it look like a different thing now?
Yes, I think what is happening is, the original sort of focus on universities' engagement in their with the world outside the academy was chiefly focused on research and business linkages, commercialization, spin-out, science parks and all that sort of stuff, and the notion of, broadly speaking, the entrepreneurial university, where universities work with business, including local businesses, with the objective of generating additional revenue. So it was, broadly speaking, around research and innovation and as it related to strengthening a local economy. It's pretty obvious that in terms of the business model, the entrepreneurial universities don't generate a lot of income from this activity, though they invest quite a lot in it, in technology transfer organisations, big support staff associated with the university business collaboration, which is linked to research. But what is becoming apparent, A, it doesn't generate a lot of income, but also the nature of the innovation process is changing, partly as a result of the growth of the digital economy and citizens being digital savvy and digitally active. There is a recognition that we're moving on from this whole idea of the university-business collaboration, in which sometimes called triple helix partnerships, universities, business and government, mm-hmm. in particular places, to a quadruple helix model, where we recognise that citizens are incredibly important as sources of innovation and ideas, as co-producers of knowledge. And that indeed the local area can be a living laboratory where business, university, citizens and public authorities work together in the co-creation of knowledge, getting ideas into new services, the way in which grand societal challenges like sustainability and ageing require partnerships of a quadruple helix nature to make a difference. So this whole discourse about the nature of who should be involved in the innovation process is changing, and place becomes a very important part of that discourse.
And also part of the mission of the modern university is to be much more global as well. So how do you see those two missions working together?
I think the key to that is if you look at the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, those 13 goals, many of those are both global and local. You cannot talk about issues of sustainable development without thinking about the issue of the sustainable city, all the issues associated with transport and mobility, and universities are key actors. They generate traffic, they have a lot of students, they're purchasers and procurers of goods and services. So the sustainability agenda was both a global issue, but it's also a local issue. The issues of an aging population, how do you build age-friendly cities? Universities are working on those grand challenges. So it's very interesting that the UK government's industrial strategy has grand challenges, and one of those grand challenges is place. So there's a recognition that you have to tackle the global challenges. And so what universities are doing, and my own university is a good example, I mean, our new mission statement is from Newcastle to the world. So we are seeing what we are doing locally as something that we can take to work across the world, to big global challenges in cities and regions and left behind communities across the world. So the public good notion of this notion of the civic university is not only civic in the traditional civitas, that's the city as a physical place, but citizenship in the global sense. We have to educate our students to be citizens of the world as well as the citizens of the place in which they're studying. And citizenship can be developed in the students by the things they're doing in their local communities.
Where does accountability come into this? I've heard some people suggesting that there should be elected officials on the boards of universities.
Well, to some degree, most universities have, certainly the pre-92 universities in the UK have a university court, which is a bit ceremonial, but nevertheless, the vice-chancellor and the chair of council is accountable to the court. So the court in my university will have represents the business community, local government, the religious communities, as a forum. So there is a mechanism already for doing that. Many people on the governing bodies of British universities, at least, are local people. So there are mechanisms, you know, they're there in their individual capacity. They're not there representing the council as such. You might have a councillor on the governing body, but they would be there in their individual capacity. I think what is more important than these issues of direct accountability in the governance sense is the public accountability, whereby the university tells the citizens of the city what they are doing to benefit them. We're not very good at it. I mean, we found this very much in the Civic University Commission. There is a vast amount of civic engagement which is going on in universities, which broadly speaking is below the radar screens of the senior management. It's done by academics at the grassroots who are in universities because they have some sense of civic responsibility rather than just going and earning as much money as possible in outside the higher education world, do a fantastic amount of community engagement work, but by and large, we are not very good at telling the stories. I mean, one of the most successful, if you go onto the King's College London website, King's has a whole series of very interesting stories about what King's is doing for London. It's very impressive. They have a vice president for London. Manchester University now has a vice president for social responsibility. So some universities are really quite taking this seriously and are working hard to communicate what they are doing to the wider public.
That's great, John. My final question for you is, because you take an international approach to your research on this topic, I'm just wondering if there is one specific model or one specific country that's really got it figured out or you think is doing this well. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind would be land-grant universities in the United States or maybe this new iteration of the European Civic University.
Well, I think the key question, public policy question, is how higher education systems are steered and managed by government in the public interest. Universities are largely publicly funded. There are private universities in some countries, but the issue is how the universities are incentivized to act in a way which benefits the public interest. And the way that is done in many countries, and I referred to that in the report we've just done for the Welsh Government, is usually done by some form of compact, whereby the university agrees with the funding body, this is what we will do to benefit civil society. This is a forward-looking document. It's not a rear-view funding stream like the HIFE program in England, which is you reward what people have done in the past, and most of the money goes to those who are already rich. You actually have a compact, and various countries have moved down that way. The Irish have done this, the Dutch have done this, and the American interest is quite interesting because clearly the land-grant universities are funded, many of them, via the individual states. And what's quite interesting in the US is that you have a network of land-grant universities called the Campus Compact, which is a network of American universities who are working together to handle the issues of how they work with their states, sharing experience at a federal level. Mm. So one of the things I would like to see happening in following the Civic University Commission is how do we develop lessons from international experience on building the capacity for collaborative working of universities with their cities. And this is not just single universities, it will involve multiple universities in many cities. What worries me extremely is that in the context of the AUGA review with the reputed reduction in fee income to 6,000 or 6,500 pounds, The universities in England have been doing a lot in this space. They haven't told enough well the story about it. But on the other hand, if they get under pressure from the fees review, I am really worried that many of them will just pull out from this agenda, and others, which are key anchor institutions, will just go bust. Hmm. We are sitting at the moment in England in a very critical moment. I don't think anybody really at a high level in government quite has got their head around it all. I mean, that's one of the reasons why the Civic University Commission, chaired by Lord Corslake, is so important.
And that was John Goddard from the University of Newcastle. John, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you very much.
It's been a really interesting conversation. If you've got any feedback or any ideas for the podcast, get in touch with me, sarah.custer@timeshighereducation.com. And you can, of course, find all of John's coverage from the Preston Model and the University of Warwick and the work they're doing in Coventry on timeshighereducation.com. We'll see you next time.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.